Great. So as you're getting settled, just to ensure that you're in the session that you intended to be in, this is the outcome session. My name is Whitney Burr. I'm with the University of Toronto. It seems a little rude for me to go first, but we're going to stick with the order that's suggested in the agenda, of course, for simplicity's sake, and proceed from my presentation to that of Diana Fox, who's with the University of Kent, and then Pietro Matz, who's with the Escuola Superior of Santa Anna de Pisa. Is that fair enough? All right. So my work relates to work that colleagues of mine, my presentation relates to work that colleagues of mine and I have undertaken recently in an effort to gain some insights into the work lives of health support workers in Canada. By health support workers, I'm referring to healthcare aides, and personal support workers. Healthcare aides in lexicon in Canadian language refer to those workers that are in nursing homes, long-term care homes, and personal support workers refer to those workers that care for the elderly in the home community. All right, so it's somewhat consistent, I think, with some of the language that's used in the UK. So just to begin, though most of my presentation will focus on work that we've done recently, psychometrics work that we've done recently in preparation for a survey that we're going to administer to health support workers in the province of Ontario, I thought I'd frame the presentation a little more generally. First, starting with what we know, which is passingly little, really, about these workers in Canada, anyway. They're increasingly important to delivering care to older Canadians in home and communities and in nursing homes. In Canada, health support workers represent a significant component of the health care labor force. There are approximately 100,000 unregulated health support workers in the province of Ontario alone, and that's where this work is situated. All health support workers in Canada are unregulated, by the by. A little over half of these workers work in nursing home settings, in long-term care settings in the province of Ontario. A little over a third work in home and community care settings, and the balance work in acute care and other sectors. In the sectors that we're focusing on here for this study, long-term care and home and community care, health support workers provide up to 80% of direct care to residents and clients. So just a bit about Ontario. It's the most populous province in Canada at about 13.5 million. There's a large geographic area that's covered by Ontario. Not most, 15% of Ontarians are currently under 65, would be in a lot of trouble if that was the case. Most were. By 2036, 25%, a quarter of the population of the province of Ontario will be over 65. We have, at this point, 36,000 long-term care beds, and we're at capacity, so occupancy tends to be 100%. 448,000 individuals currently receive care in their homes, frail seniors. 80%, as I said before, of the direct care to seniors is provided by healthcare aides and PSWs. And these workers are unregulated in Canada. In Ontario, they're not covered by the Regulated Health Professions Act of 1991. They're not recognized as a profession, and they work under the direction of regulated professions like RNs and RPNs, registered nurses, and registered practical nurses. So we don't know much more than we know in Canada. Despite their evident importance to elder care in Canada, particularly to the care of individuals in long-term care homes and in the home and community, we know very little about these workers' characteristics, including their training and preparation, the work contexts and structures in which they work, their attitudes, for example, how they feel about their work, how they would assess their quality of work life, their job satisfaction, the extent to which they're engaged in their work, and their commitment to the organizations for which they work. All of these worker characteristics, work contexts, and work attitudes have been shown to influence key outcomes like individual performance, quality of care potentially in healthcare, and turnover and tension. And further, in Canada, we know relatively little about very basic things, things like demographics, these workers' wages and benefits, whether they consider themselves to be adequately prepared to provide the care that they're charged with caring to elderly Canadians, and or what they would identify as gaps in their knowledge and experience. So it's a rather tragic picture, actually, frankly, with respect to what we don't know regarding these workers. The purpose of our overarching study, of which this is a small piece, is to improve our understanding, surprise, surprise, of the role and significance of health support workers in Canada. We refer to these as Canada's invisible workforce. Clearly, they're certainly hugely important to the care of older Canadians, but we know very, very little of them, and they have no voice because they aren't regulated in Canada. We're responding to calls for research that addresses the sustainability of healthcare and health human resources. And the work that I will describe today is preliminary to a first phase of a three-year multi-phase, three-phase study, mixed methods study. And here I'll describe some recent psychometrics work that we've undertaken in preparation for a survey that we're going to administer to all 100,000 health support workers in Ontario this spring. So this is by way of offering a picture of the larger study, and then I'll get into the more specific work that we've done very recently. All of this work is by way of, that I'll talk about in a moment, is by way of preparing us for the health support workers survey that we'll administer soon in the first phase of our study. In the second phase of our study, we're undertaking largely a series of structured interviews with stakeholders throughout the industry, ultimately to inform a set of system solutions that we hope will offer some suggestions in terms of how to enhance the longer-term sustainability of elder care in the province of Ontario and in Canada generally. And then the third part of our study relates to a health economics exercise. We're going to use the work in parts one and two to inform forecast modeling of these system solutions. So the first phase, back to this first phase, that focuses on the health support workers' work-life survey. This survey collects essential information about who comprises the workforce, basically all those things that we don't know, what these workers do, where they work, how their work is designed, and factors that influence how much they work, particularly factors that present barriers to them working more than they currently do, their perceptions of their work environments, including work attitudes, and how likely they are to remain in a given job or a sector or, in fact, as part of the health services worker labor force. So the survey is designed to address two specific questions, the first being what are the demographic, work environment, and job characteristics of these workers in Ontario, the province of Ontario, the focus of the study, in the home and community care and long-term care sectors, and how do those characteristics differ within and across sectors. So in this instance, we'll be able to address some job mobility issues that we've heard about anecdotally at this point in terms of these workers being able to move even from home and community care to long-term care. Never do they move back. And across other sectors within the healthcare system. And then the second question that the survey's intended to address are how these characteristics relate to health support workers' work attitudes, things like job satisfaction and work engagement that I'll talk about at length in a moment, and work outcomes, intent to leave, and quality of care, and how do these relationships then differ within and across sectors. All right, so this is a very, very busy slide, but we're very fortunate to have at hand a number of very robust items and instruments by which to measure some of these constructs, and these are reflected in our draft survey at this point. But I'm not going to make the assumption that you know what some of these things are. I'm going to make the assumption that you're interested, so I'm going to talk a little bit about some of these things. Work engagement relates to a work-related state of mind, so, and it's been characterized as comprising of between one and three dimensions. There's a bit of, you know, exciting argument in the literature around what those dimensions really are, the extent to which there's a multi or unidimensionality. Vigor, dedication, and absorption are referred to when there are discussions of work engagement. And by vigor, we're talking about individuals responding to items along the lines of agree, disagree. While I'm at my job, I feel very energetic. Or at my job, I feel strong and vigorous. So that's the vigor dimension. Dedication with respect to work engagement refers to responding to items like I'm excited about doing my job, I find my job interesting, I'm proud of the work that I do. And absorption refers to feelings of being engaged in your work, paying attention while you're at work or focusing your attention on work, and feeling happy when you're working hard. So that's work engagement. And there's a very nice 9-item scale that's been developed by Schiaffelli and colleagues that we're using in the survey. organizational commitment. It's been around for, this concept has been around for much longer. You're probably familiar with it. It has to do with the positive affect and psychological attachment that people have to their workplaces, right? We all have that, right? And again, there's some arguments, interesting arguments, about the extent to which there's, how many dimensions of organizational commitment there are. There's some very recent work that's been done that suggests that, surprise, surprise, organizational commitment in a workplace can have a multitude of targets. So you can be committed to your organization, you can be committed to your unit, you can be committed to your team, and so on. So we haven't explored that yet. In the focus groups that we've undertaken thus far, but we think we should, given in particular the different nature of the settings in which these workers work. So in nursing homes, healthcare aides very likely are more likely to have a closer affiliation with their nursing home organization, while in the home and community care setting, personal support workers have less sense of an organization for which they work. They're more affiliated with the client, in fact, or the family for whom they're working. So that's organizational commitment. Quality of work life, very straightforward. Work-related goal attainment, this is important. It's been shown empirically to impact performance, and it's impacted by interactions with coworkers and with the work environment. So we're going to use a nice quality of work life measure that's been used, in healthcare in the past. Job satisfaction has to do with workers' positive feelings toward their job. We've probably all been asked about our job satisfaction in the past. Psychological empowerment is a concept that's not been explored or has been underexplored in healthcare. It's been explored a bit in the nursing literature, but rarely, if ever, explored in the long-term care setting, in home community care settings. So this has to do with self-orientation that people have with regard to their work role. And there are four components: meaning, competence, self-determination, and impact. So when you ask individuals about their psychological empowerment with respect to meaning, you ask them questions like, agree or disagree, the work that I do is important to me, it's meaningful to me. With respect to competence, you're asking questions around confidence about their ability to do their job, feelings that they're good at their job, and feelings that they have the skills to enable them to do a good job. Self-determination refers to flexibility that workers feel that they have with respect to doing their job, the independence that they feel that they have, and whether or not they can decide to do their work. And when I was in focus groups doing some cognitive debriefing around these items, some of my healthcare aides actually laughed when I asked them if they had flexibility and autonomy. So it just kind of puts it all into perspective. Moving now to work outcomes. We'll look at some fairly classic outcomes. Turnover and tension. So this will refer to health support workers' declared intentions to leave their current job or leave their sector or transfer to another sector or leave the profession altogether. Organizational citizenship behaviors have been of long interest to some of us on the research team. We're looking at those that are specifically directed toward the organization. So organizational citizenship behaviors generally are extra role behaviors individuals demonstrate. So outside of the prescribed role of the worker, generally if you're engaged and happy, you go above and beyond, and we likely all do that, or we know people that do, right? And that's all good, and organizations depend on those behaviors, in fact, to perform better, enhance improvement, and so on. Organizational citizenship behaviors directed to the organization are of particular type. So they're behaviors that challenge the status quo. Individuals exhibit them, and they are intended to enhance the effectiveness of organizations. So it's kind of for the better good kinds of extra role behaviors, a bit different than some of the other OCBs, which are directed toward, my colleague, whom I'd like to help, and so on. So we're going to incorporate a nice four-item measure that was developed by Choi recently. And then quality of care looks at the self-reported quality of client care and factors related to care provisions. So in a nutshell, those are items on our intended survey. In an ideal world, this is the conceptual framework that we're going to explore in the first phase of our study. So demographic characteristics, work environment, and job characteristics on the left, moving through to work attitudes and how those are impacted by those things, and then looking ultimately at work outcomes, turnover, OCBOs, which have been associated with quality of care, in other study settings. What the red circled items are the problematic ones, because these have been either underexplored or not explored at all in the home and community care and long-term care sectors. So before we launch a survey, we thought it important to undertake some psychometrics work. So we completed some cognitive debriefing. We piloted a short version of the work-life survey recently and undertook some psychometric tests of the pilot data. So last fall, I sat down with us in a series of focus groups, a short series, with health support workers in the long-term care sector, and undertook a linguistic validation exercise, basically worked through the wording of the items associated with these skills on work engagement, psychological empowerment, organizational commitment, I'll come back to that in a minute, and organizational citizenship behavior. And this ultimated in alternative wording to all but the organizational citizenship behavior items. I'm pleased to share the wording with you. I have an electronic link to the survey if you'd like to take a look. With respect to organizational commitment, we did sit down exclusively with health support workers in the long-term care sector, so healthcare aides, and as it turns out, when we administered the pilot survey to our home and community care sector folks, the wording of those items didn't quite make sense because they don't see themselves as working for organizations, they see themselves as working for the family unit. So we need to go back and revisit some of that wording. So I've excluded it from subsequent our psychometric testing stuff. So we did undertake a survey pilot of the short version of the survey, and in addition to items relating to these concepts above, commitment, OCBO, and so on, we added items relating to concepts that have shown to be related in the organizational behavior literature and other settings, so turnover and job satisfaction. So there was a total of 41 items on the short version of the survey. By virtue of the pilot, we were able to examine the logistics and the accessibility of two delivery formats and the timing. So ultimately, we had, in a short period of time, 388 health support workers in Ontario respond to the short version of the survey. There were 248 from the home and community care sector and 140 from the long-term care sector. The majority of responses were by virtue of the online. Both online and paper versions were made available. And 95 were fewer responded to the paper survey. But the association here, the important association here, is that most of the online respondents were home and community care workers, and most of the paper survey respondents were long-term care. So there wasn't a great deal of uptake. There wasn't enough, in my view, of uptake in the long-term care sector. And we have, as I'll mention later, a debriefing session planned for the nursing home administrators who piloted the short version of the survey so that we can talk with them about what might make if the online version more attractive to the healthcare aides in their homes. All right, so in the interest of establishing construct validity, we undertook a confirmatory factor analysis. So work engagement behaved as we had seen it behave in other settings, and our results support a three-factor solution to work engagement. Psychological empowerment similarly behaved. Those four dimensions that I referred to earlier were visible in our data. And the OCBO is shown here, the organizational citizenship behavior solution is shown here. In addition, turnover and job satisfaction were all unidimensional models. Okay, and then we undertook to establish discriminant validity. We undertook a series of pairwise confirmatory factor analyses. This is an approach that Vogus and Sutcliffe used that we thought was clever and we understood. So we undertook these. So essentially then you see that you start with this pair and move up, and then you undertake a three-factor model in this case, because that's what theoretically we should be seeing. And indeed the three-factor model fits better than any of the pairs and so on. So the three-factor model is the best fit. So while these are theoretically related constructs, they are distinct. So, right? Okay. For to establish predictive validity, then, with respect to work engagement, we know that from the literature, again, outside of healthcare largely, and certainly outside of long-term care and home and community care, that it has been shown to be predictive of organizational citizenship behaviors, job satisfaction, and turnover. So we ran a series of correlations, and we observed that indeed that relationship, seems to apply here. So for individuals who, and this makes sense, again, big sigh of relief, for those individuals who have high work engagement, they are also individuals who have high job satisfaction. You're engaged in your work, you're more likely to be satisfied with your job. For those individuals who are engaged in their work, they're less prone to turnover, right? And for those individuals who are engaged in their work, they are those individuals that tend to demonstrate more organizational citizenship behaviors, right? Which has implications for performance and quality of care and so on, we think. And then in terms of establishing discriminant and predictive validity, we did the same thing with the four dimensions of psychological empowerment that we'd done in a few prior slides. So we dumped all four dimensions, data for all four dimensions of psychological empowerment into a confirmatory factor analysis, along with job sat, organizational citizenship behavior, and work engagement, and we showed that there was the best fit was the seven-factor model, so all four dimensions of psychological empowerment and the other three constructs. And then the table here shows the correlations again and suggests that things are behaving as they seem to have behaved in other study settings. So positive, significant correlations among these. I keep pointing this at you. You're going to be blind by the end of it. Positive, significant correlations across these scales, with the exception of turnover, as one would expect, where there's a negative significant correlation. And then we had the ability to have a look at concurrent validity when it came to psychological empowerment. So we thought, given what we knew about the home and community care and long-term care settings, that we'd see a little bit of difference with respect to a couple of the psychological empowerment dimensions. So specifically the self-determination dimension, we thought would be lower among long-term care workers, since we know this to be a pretty low autonomy setting. Right? So responses to I have the flexibility to decide how to do my job, or I can decide how to do my work, we expected to be lower, less favorable among long-term care workers than home and community care workers. And similarly, but the converse, the impact dimension we thought would be lower among home and community care workers, since they're more removed from their organization in their daily work. So in response to things like I have a lot of control over what happens in my organization, we expected home and community care workers to not feel that quite so much as the long-term care workers might. And so indeed we did find that the means for both of those dimensions were significantly different in the expected direction. So again, big sigh of relief, that's good. Everything seems to be behaving as it should. Okay, and here is simply the correlation matrix with alphas in red along the diagonal. What we haven't talked about are kind of mean responses. So here we see these are all seven-point scales. So we see fairly high responses to questions around work engagement. So these workers are generally feeling quite engaged with respect to psychological empowerment. We see, again, quite high responses along the competency dimension, similarly along the meaning dimension, so they feel competent and equipped to do their job, meaning the work is meaningful to them. Self-determination slips a little bit, and here this is the independence and feelings of flexibility and so on, so perhaps not surprising. The psychological empowerment impact items were responded to far less favorably, and this is probably the influence of the majority of respondents being home and community care workers, who indeed didn't feel as though their work was as impactful vis-a-vis their organization, right, as opposed to a long-term care worker who has a sense of home being the organization. In terms of organizational citizenship behaviors, this is about 5 on a 7-point scale, so this is quite heartening. These are individuals that are feeling as though they are quite influential. They're able to suggest new ways of doing work better, more effectively, and innovate. So if you think of it as a proxy for innovation, that's quite outstanding. And then turnover intention is quite low on the 7-point scale. So in summary, things are behaving as we expected or hoped they would. Work engagement appears to be consistent with a three-dimensional scale that's been described elsewhere in the literature. The four-factor model for psychological empowerment, and so this is important because these constructs and these scales have not been tested and tried in the long-term care settings and home and community care settings before. Our analysis supported the unidimensionality of OCB, organizational citizenship behaviors, job SAT, and turnover intention measures, and we have good support for construct validity, discriminant, predictive, and concurrent validity for the scales. So we do have some things to do, however. We have to revisit the wording for the items on organizational commitment and psychological empowerment, specifically with health support workers working in the home and community care sector. So we had that little glitch whereby we thought that they would be removed from their organizations and wouldn't have the strong affiliation with things organizational that other workers do. And we have a plan to debrief with our long-term care home administrators regarding their survey pilot experiences. And we need to finalize the work-life survey and take it to the field by late spring 2015. So that's it. Thank you.